I'm Karen.
And I'm Greg.
Hello, Hot Springs. You're listening to Library Beat, a weekly podcast from the Razorback Camper Sale Studio, where we talk about all things library.
This week on Library Beat, Karen is on vacation. So what do? I go to the movies with Chris Hall, the library's dedicated cinephile and cult classic expert. Stay tuned to hear what Chris has to say about the world of cinema, including the Criterion Collection. And Karen, I'm sorry, we did not get around to Smokey and the Bandit this time.
Chris, welcome to Library Beat. You've actually been on the podcast before, even though you might not remember it.
Fleetingly,
yes. We talked to you about our lockers one time.
Yes.
And I think I also asked you about some books at one point. But why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners?
My name is Chris Hall, and I work at the Garland County Library. I am a public services coordinator, which is a very, very fancy way of saying I'm a clerk and do all sorts of desk duty stuff. But I also work on some of the outreach stuff like lockers and help stock those and man those and on-shelf holds, calling people for holds, right. All that sort of stuff.
You stay very busy. It's been very busy the last few days. This summer, our numbers are up to where they were like before the
pre-pandemic.
So we've been very busy. So I'm glad you were able to take the time today to talk to the podcast. One thing that I know you do, you're one of our like go-to movie recommendation people. People come in and they're wondering, well, what do I like to watch? Usually you can come up with a pretty good recommendation. So I thought we would talk about movies today, maybe even branch out into cinema, if that's not too pretentious a term.
That's with quotation marks around it. Yes. Cinema.
Cinema. But one thing, I know you're knowledgeable about all kinds of movies, but I've noticed just from talking to you and hearing you talk about movies, you know a lot about what we might call cinema.
Yeah, serious, quote-unquote, films. Yeah.
Right.
I've been interested in film for quite a while. I think everybody kind of grows up liking movies. Most people do. I mean, there are some people that just get nothing out of it. You know, my mother doesn't really watch films. My brother's the same way. He doesn't really pay attention. But I've always liked films ever since I was very, very little. And I think most people watch whatever's popular, whatever's current, whatever's in their life at the time when you're a kid. Maybe it's Disney movies or animation, and then you grow up and maybe you branch out and you find, oh, I like comedies or I like horror or I like historical dramas. But I was always just kind of interested in a little bit of everything. When I was a teenager, I started getting more curious about movies and doing more exploration and trying to see like non-English films, for instance, or quote-unquote classics, things that are older, things that my generation might not necessarily have encountered
right. Just
naturally, except on maybe cable.
Sure. We've had some other people who have worked here who say that they're really into movies, but if you ask them about anything that came out before the year 2000,
yeah. They've
either never heard of it or just not really interested and
or even learning about it. Yeah,
to each his own. But to me, if you're interested in movies, you would want to know more. You know,
it would be good to have a nice balance. I'm almost the opposite, where the modern stuff, a lot of it I don't really watch. I mean, I watch stuff that appeals to me that I know I'm gonna like, and I have a pretty good idea of, you know, been alive 32 years almost, and I have a good understanding of what my tastes are and what appeals to me. And generally, if something's very acclaimed or otherwise very, very popular, I might give it a look if it was something that might not have interested me. But now, generally, I don't keep up with a whole lot of what's going on at the moment until it gets a sort of consensus built around it, usually, which is maybe not a great thing. But I do have more of, I guess, a foundational knowledge of film.
Well, you said
history.
This interest started in high school. How did you learn about like these foreign directors and things like that? Because you couldn't just go down to the Malco and check out a Fellini movie.
Well, you could go to Movie Gallery. They might have it, or Hastings. But this is dating myself. When I was like coming up and starting getting interested in films, you would you know, if you went on Turner Classic Movies mm-hmm. and just looked at what was upcoming, and you could usually, like on cable TV back then, you could click info and it would give you like, not necessarily, Rotten Tomatoes wasn't really a big thing at the time, so it wouldn't give you like the Rotten Tomatoes score, but it would give right. you like a little star system about how many stars that it was rated critically or what the consensus on was it. So anything that I would look at on like Turner Classic Movies, if it had 4 stars or, you know, if it was like rated perfectly, I would go, mm-hmm. oh, I'm going to watch that. And I would add it to the, you know, the DVR.
Yeah.
And
do you keep a list of the movies you've seen?
I do, actually. Yeah. I'm very list oriented. So I do have a list. It goes back as far as I can remember. There's obviously there's going to be gaps of things like you saw when you were like, very young and you don't, right. you have very limited recollections of. But as far as like being an adult and like anytime I see something new, I do, yeah, add it to the list.
Neat. I used to love those books, and we might still have one at the library, but I don't think they really make them anymore. They'd be out of date. It wasn't a Roger Ebert movie book, but it was one of
those.
Was it
Leonard Maltin?
It was Leonard Maltin, exactly. And yeah. to me, that was just like a dream reference book because I could spend hours just looking through and reading the descriptions of the movies and the star ratings and seeing if you sort of agreed with their rating of it or what have you.
And you're never going to find a critic that you necessarily agree with 100% of the time. Leonard Maltin, you know, I've read a little bit of his stuff, but I've mainly read Roger Ebert growing up just mm-hmm. because he was the big guy. And Siskel, you know, died kind of when I was very young. So I don't have very many memories of Siskel just being on the TV show,
yeah.
except going back and watching them on like YouTube now. Just if I get curious about a film, I go, oh, I wonder if their reviews of it is on YouTube.
Neat.
Yeah, just to see what they thought about it. Ebert, though, I always preferred his website. Just his written reviews mm-hmm. are, to me, much more interesting than anything he did on that, you know, at the movies
right.
show.
Well, and his brand has continued on beyond his passing. That website still
his
exists.
His wife, I think, still runs the website, and there are reviewers that work for that website under that banner. Yeah, and I don't really, every now and then I'll click on there and look at it, but it's just not the same since he passed
right.
away.
No Roger Ebert then.
And I didn't always agree with Ebert. There were several films that I strongly disagreed with him on, but I always liked his writing style and his, yeah. There were some times he was very, very precise in how he could just get to the heart of what a film was about emotionally.
Right.
You know, I think one of my favorite reviews of his is the movie Sideways with Paul Giamatti.
Yeah.
If you've seen that film.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Ebert's review of that's a very good review.
Okay. Well, I'll have to check that out.
His great movie essays are pretty good, too.
Yeah. I know we've got at least a couple of books of his collected reviews and essays, and I have read some of those along the way, but I don't think I've read all of them. But yeah, he was a great, great writer.
And he won the Pulitzer, I think, for his writing. So he's one of the only film critics that I think won
sure.
a Pulitzer. That's just off the top of my head. There may have been since then, but I know for sure he definitely did.
Yeah.
I can't remember if Pauline Kael, maybe she might have been one of the others. I know
right.
she was very, very popular. I never really got very involved with Pauline Kael or her writing other than like her Citizen Kane
mm-hmm.
essay, if you've read that one.
I don't know if I have. I did see a documentary about her not too long ago that was pretty interesting.
Well, Tarantino's very into her.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's making a film now that's kind of based a little bit on her.
Oh, neat.
It's going to be like more of a, I think he's describing it as like a Travis Bickle meets Pauline Kael kind of thing.
Okay.
So
that's an interesting combination for
yeah.
sure. Okay. So you've described a little bit about how your movie education started. I'm trying to figure out sort of what era. So this would be sort of before the major streaming services.
Yeah, I graduated high school in 2009.
Right.
So it would have been before that. And we didn't have internet
yeah.
either at the time. Like we had dial-up. So
right.
even if streaming had existed at that time, and I'm sure maybe it did in some, like Netflix may have just been starting
mm-hmm.
out, but we couldn't really watch
so,
videos.
So you would watch out for movies on TCM.
Yeah, Turner Classic Movies.
Yeah, very good.
Was a big source for me.
Yeah.
One of the very first ones I remember watching and getting like very fascinated fascinated by was Fritz Lang's M
mm-hmm.
from 1931. I don't know if you've seen that one with Peter Lorre.
I don't know if I've seen it or if I'm just kind of familiar with it from seeing clips and things. I couldn't swear that I've sat down and watched the whole
thing. It's one of those films that like is always held up as like German expressionism and film noir, like one of the foundational films of that kind of style.
Right.
And that style was very appealing to me at the time. It still kind of is.
Yeah. My film education really kind of started at the library. I was always interested in movies, but I remember I had moved away and moved back here. But then I came to the library and there were all these foreign films, you know, the Bergman and Fellini and whatever.
I was actually very shocked when I first, so I didn't grow up here in Hot Springs. I was born here in Hot Springs, but I grew up in Glen Rose, which is a small little rural community kind of in between Benton and Malvern. It's just kind of nestled in there. It's very rural. It's very, you know, wooded. So we didn't really have a library anywhere near us. The closest one would be the one in Malvern, which is the Hot Spring County Library.
Right.
So this wasn't my home library growing up. The earliest library memories I have are from the Hot Spring County Library. And then when my parents got divorced, we started going to the Saline County Library because my dad lived in Saline County.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until growing up and coming back here that I came to our library and did find out that we had a lot of, I was already interested in these films,
mm-hmm.
but I was shocked by how many were in the, like in our circuit, in our catalog, in circulation.
Yeah. I think we have a pretty impressive collection. We certainly don't have every classic film or, you know, some of the more obscure ones, but you know, if you want just sort of a basic understanding of the major foreign films, we're probably going to have those. So it's
a lot of the foundational kind of things that you need to build a good working knowledge of classic cinema and classic world cinema and foreign films. Yeah.
Right. Well, one thing we've talked about before is the Criterion Collection.
Yes.
Which, if people aren't familiar, could you describe what the Criterion Collection is?
So the
exactly.
Yeah, the Criterion Collection is it's actually a line of DVDs and Blu-rays. It actually started in 1984, and they started with Laserdisc.
Oh,
if you remember Laserdisc,
yeah,
they were
mm-hmm.
they were like vinyl sized.
Right.
And Criterion was one of the first brands for home video. Back then, home video was just kind of starting out, Laserdisc and VHS and Betamax,
mm-hmm.
and it was more about just having it than it was about presenting it in the best way it could be.
Right.
Now we have 4K, which is, you know, twice the resolution of HD. And then we had HD, which is like Blu-ray disc and things like that. But before that, like DVD was standard definition, and VHS, Laserdisc, Betamax, they were even worse.
Mm-hmm.
So back then it was more about just getting films to a wide audience, getting them on video for the first time, getting them accessible to people, putting them in their homes. There wasn't as much of a focus on preserving films as in historically preserving them or remastering them, restoring them, or educating people on the importance of the films, giving a lot of like essays or making of features, behind the scenes features, commentaries on the films. But Criterion was like one of the first companies that started that. They kind of pioneered it
mm-hmm.
in many ways. And what we think of as like, well, now that physical media is dying, I guess younger listeners might not realize this, but there was a time when it was just kind of expected that you would get a DVD or a Blu-ray and it would have behind the scenes features, it would have commentaries, it would have, you know, some kind of other, there would be supplements. It wouldn't just have the film.
Right. Well, I think that was probably one of the selling points, aside from just higher picture quality for maybe people to ditch their VHS tape to actually get the DVD because you are getting these bonus.
And like I said, they started out on Laserdisc and they were kind of doing it. And the very first films they released on Laserdisc were Citizen Kane and King Kong.
All right.
So that gives you an idea of how eclectic the collection can be. There's over 1,600 films in the Criterion Collection. So if you can't find a film you like out of those 1,600, I don't know what to tell you. But yeah, it ranges from Citizen Kane to Godzilla and King Kong. When they went to DVD, the very first titles that they released on DVD were Seven Samurai by Akira Kurosawa and Grand Illusion by, it's Renoir, right?
That sounds right.
Yeah.
That's the impression that I have of the Criterion Collection. I know that there are some American films included, but just the first thing that comes to mind is showcasing sort of world cinema because there are movies in there that you... They do have the sort of heavy hitters, the 400 blows, ones that people are even sort of, you know, vaguely interested in foreign films have probably heard of. but also a lot of pretty obscure ones.
Yeah, like a lot of like your baby's first foreign films, like Ingmar Bergman and Fellini and Kurosawa and the French New Wave. Those are all staples. They've been released on every format pretty much by Criterion. From, like I said, starting out in Laserdisc, then they moved to DVD. They do, you know, Blu-rays, and they're even doing 4K now, which is pretty recent. That's within the past like year or two that they've started doing 4K Blu-rays, which are ultra HD. But yeah, there's a little bit of everything in the collection, and we have a pretty extensive catalog of their releases. We have a little cart that we have that's just curated specifically for that.
We had a patron who I think asked us, you know, why we didn't put them all together, because he was tired of having to
sort through our DVDs because they're all sorted by title.
Right. So we have put a cart out to make it handy. It might not have every single one on it, but we have thrown quite a few on there. And do you know how those are curated?
It's honestly they check out, and when the cart kind of empties, I just go and usually browse the shelf and see what other things can be added, and then they just kind of...
I didn't ask the question very well.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Do you know how the Criterion Collection is curated? Is it like a panel of film experts?
I think some of it depends on licensing agreements, because films are owned by... You know, just releasing it on DVD, you don't own it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if it's a Warner Brothers film, Warner Brothers owns it. If it's a Disney film, Disney owns it. So I'm sure that plays a big role in it, is whether or not they're able to even acquire it.
Right.
Up until recently, they didn't have very much animation, you know, in their collection. And their mission statement says, since 1984, the Criterion Collection has been dedicated to publishing important classic and contemporary films from around the world in editions that offer the highest technical quality and award-winning original supplements. No matter the medium, from Laserdisc to DVD, Blu-ray, 4K, Ultra HD to streaming, Criterion has maintained its pioneering commitment to presenting each film as its maker would want it to be seen, in state-of-the-art restorations with special features designed to encourage repeated watching and deepen the viewer's appreciation of the art of film. Their criteria for Criterion is important classic and contemporary films.
Right.
If it meets that definition, I think they consider it, because you've got... Obviously, Citizen Kane, which is by many, you know, in many polls always voted like the greatest film of all time, although it recently got dethroned by Vertigo in 2012 and then last year by Jean Dillemont, right?
Right. That's something that we discussed. Is it a 10-year poll, or is it?
The Sight and Sound poll is every 10 years.
Every 10 years, the snootiest. Is it just film critics?
It's critics. There's actually two polls. There's a poll for critics, and then there's a poll for directors.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's a pretty, I don't know how influential it is, but, you know, it's fairly famous.
I mean, it used to be very, very important, because that's why Citizen Kane kind of developed the reputation it did.
Right.
Was through people championing it.
Yeah.
And.
But there was kind of a shakeup in the most recent poll, film that probably most people had never
not
heard
even heard of.
I had never heard of.
I hadn't either.
It was by a Belgian woman director from the 1970s, and I cannot remember her name.
I can't remember her name either off the top
of
my head.
But she made a film called Jean Dielman, followed by, I think, her address.
Yeah.
And
it's in French. That's why we're...
Yes.
Not remembering it. It's a very obscure film, but it's in the Criterion Collection. So
it is in the Criterion Collection. It was voted the number one film according to this very snooty,
very snooty
group of people. And I did watch it, and I did find it very interesting. I would not go so far to say it's the greatest film of all time.
It's something like 3.5 hours long, isn't it? I mean,
pretty long, and. Not a lot of action, you know.
So it's not the Avengers.
Not the Avengers by any means. But, you know, if people are interested in film, it's definitely worth watching. Polls like that, I guess, are sort of a conversation starter.
Yeah, and it starts conversations. I mean, it started a conversation here at work about that film.
Right.
We had never heard of it.
Yeah.
And we're both pretty knowledgeable about classics and about foreign film, but... Everybody's going to have gaps in what they know, and there's no shame in that. And I think that's another reason people maybe get put off by getting into the film is because there is sort of a snootiness to it. There's a pretentiousness that can come with it.
Yes.
A very, like, I smoke clothes cigarettes and blow the smoke in your face kind of dismissively,
yes,
you know, caricature of a quote-unquote film person. But that's what's nice about home video, like things like the Criterion Collection or now streaming, is that there are no more like gatekeepers. You can kind of go in and just explore and find things and find what you like.
Right. And that's why the library is great, because you're not out any money either.
That's true.
You know, just take it home if you don't like it.
And if you don't like it, return it. And, you know, there's always staff here that can issue recommendations. You can always ask a staff member at the desk, do you like this movie?
You.
Well, not just me, but, you know, if you're looking for more modern things, I'm probably not the person to ask. If you're asking about, like, the latest Dwayne The Rock Johnson movie, I'll be like, well, Black Adam, but that's about all I know. The Fast and the Furious, maybe.
Have you turned anybody on to any of these sort of classic films and heard any feedback?
There have been. There was one time... guy was looking for recommendations, and he had turned in things that were kind of similar to it. So I recommended The Night of the Hunter, which
is
one of my favorite films, and it's in the Criterion Collection as well,
right,
with Robert Mitchum. And he came back and said he was really grateful that I'd recommend it because he loved
excellent.
It.
Good
yeah.
City Plumbing, Heating, and Electric offers free HVAC estimates and has discounts for seniors and veterans. Their vision is to provide prompt, reliable service that exceeds expectations. Their positive and cooperative attitude has made them a provider of choice in Garland County for over 30 years. Thanks, City Plumbing, Heating, and Electric, for your next project. Call 501-623-3325 or 501-922-3325.
Have it's hard to pick a favorite. I know it is not John Dielman.
It's not
Let's say someone who is not super familiar with world cinema, but they're a little bit interested. Do you have sort of a good recommendation to get someone started? Something that's interesting enough to kind of keep their attention while they're fumbling through the subtitles?
If it's specifically for foreign film, I'm a big fan of Kurosawa. He's a Japanese filmmaker. Mm-hmm. He made Seven Samurai, Rashomon. He's kind of he's one of those guys that's kind of like Stanley Kubrick or, you know, Hitchcock, where he just made so many
right.
great films. And you look at his filmography and it's just studded with you know, masterpiece after masterpiece. So Rashomon, Seven Samurai. A lot of people usually start with like Seven Samurai, Rashomon, because those are the two that are the most well known of his films. And I think they're both great films. And Yojimbo's a great film. But I would recommend Ran, R-A-N, by Kurosawa. It was one of his later films. He made it in 1985, and it's an adaptation of Shakespeare.
Yeah.
It's King Lear, but done with samurais. It's a very, very colorful film as well, but dark, because it's a Shakespearean tragedy, obviously, so you know it doesn't have a happy ending. But that's one of my all-time favorites. Another favorite of mine is a silent film, actually, The Passion of Joan of Arc. And that was by Carl Dreyer, and it was released in 1928. And when I tell people this is a silent film, they kind of, ugh, you know, they don't want to... Silent film is one of those things that's even among people who love movies, and you can get them to sit down and watch a black and white movie, or you can get them to sit down and watch a film that's maybe not in English,
right,
a subtitled film. People still have a lot of trouble with silent films, but some of the most creative filmmaking really in the history of the medium happened in that era in the 20s, because it was such a fresh medium and people were experimenting with it. And then when the invention of sound came in, the cameras got too heavy that they couldn't move and maneuver
them.
They
have a microphone in front of them, kind of what we're doing, and they would hide it like in a bucket of flowers or what have you.
And that's why in the early sound films, they're very stagey. The camera doesn't move. It sets in one spot. It looks like they're filming a stage play, because
that's exactly what they were doing.
So silent film didn't have to worry about that. And so you see a lot of innovation, a lot of creativity, a lot of stuff that Orson Welles would be influenced by when he finally got more freedom to move the camera instead, or maybe invented the means to do it. in Citizen Kane, he kind of brought it into the sound era. But a lot of those innovations and technical innovations were in silent films, and one of those films would be the Passion of Joan of Arc. And it's just a great film on an emotional level. You don't have to be necessarily religious or believe in the aspects of you know, the faith that accompany the story, because I don't necessarily, but it's just a good film on its own terms.
It's an interesting recommendation. I don't think I've seen it. I do know that one of the sort of famous Hitchcock quotes is that what he thought ruined the movies was the addition of sound. And you can see that in his films.
Well, he started out in the silent era, too, right, and remade several of his films in sound.
He called it pure cinema, where you're telling the story
with visuals,
camera angles and all that, rather than people sitting
talking,
there yakking. Yeah.
The 20s were honestly kind of more creative than the 30s and into the 40s, I would say, just in terms of what the camera does, in terms of moving the camera. Around the time of Citizen Kane, things start to change, though. And then, you know, you show a modern person that has no, you know, vocabulary for this sort of thing, they're not going to be impressed, because they've grown up with CGI and all of the, you know, I mean, we don't even have to have a person in the frame anymore. Yeah. And we don't. A lot of the times. A lot of times you're looking at, you know, a green screen and tennis balls that were, you know, computer generated. Definitely anybody who's interested in foreign films, like I said, The Passion of Joan of Arc, it is a foreign film technically, because it was made by a Danish filmmaker. And the film just has a really interesting history behind it, because it was lost for many, many years. A lot of silent films have been lost.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've either caught fire and...
Probably most of them.
Yeah. It's something... It's a very high amount in terms of what we are still missing. Films that were known about. One of them, off the top of my head, there's one called London After Midnight with Lon Chaney. We have stills of the film, but we don't have the film anymore.
At the time, I think people just thought these were sort of ephemeral entertainments,
yeah,
not really worth.
And they weren't
saving.
They weren't preserved, and they weren't taken care of, and that's why we don't have them.
In the film they were made on was highly flammable.
Nitrate.
Yeah.
Yeah, nitrate is very, very flammable. And a lot of silent films were lost to fires. Studios would catch on fire, and then the nitrate would burn.
Right.
And that's happened to several master negatives for some of these films. For those of you who don't know, like, film back in the day, now we have digital. We can shoot on digital. We can record on digital. This is being recorded on a digital file. But film, actual film stock, had to be kind of kept in good conditions, or it would deteriorate. It would mold. It would mildew. It would disintegrate if it was left in humidity or... And Criterion, one of the things that's interesting about the Criterion Collection is that they have gone back to these films and paid to have them restored and upgraded and fixed.
And sometimes you'll see those, like, sort of before and after pictures where, you know, it's this horribly grainy, the colors.
Well, the color will be washed out completely,
right.
Yeah.
And then they'll show their restoration. So you're getting to see the pictures, like, they
before
were,
and after.
Right.
And what they did to it, what their... technicians and all of that were able to accomplish with the base elements. I know John Waters is one of my favorite filmmakers, just in terms of the spirit of his films. Maybe not necessarily the content, but just the fact that he had the determination to make them at the time he made them,
right,
with what little money he had available to him. But I saw in one of the Criterion interviews for him that he kept the negatives for a lot of his films in his attic.
Yeah.
And they were just up there in the heat and the cold and all that. And a filmmaker, was like, what's the big deal? He didn't understand why that was why that was so bad. And Criterion had to go in and, like, color correct some of it and fix some of it. But they said it didn't deteriorate as much as some of the studio films that they had worked with had, which is very interesting to me.
Well, Chris, I feel like I've been in the presence of a knowledgeable film buff. Thank you so much for talking to us. Is there anything that we didn't get to talk about that you think people should know about the world of film or the cinema?
I would just encourage people to have more curiosity, to watch things that you might not necessarily watch, just to see if it sounds like something you might be into. If you're a horror film fan, go back and watch something like Psycho or Eyes Without a Face, which is a French film from 1960 as well, the same year as Psycho.
Right.
You can find little things that might capture your your imagination,
sure.
and you might not have given it a chance
that
just
might
based
lead
on.
You on to this next thing and the other thing.
Well, it's kind of like what's the 5 to 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, 5 degrees of Kevin Bacon. You know what I'm talking mm-hmm. about? That little game.
Right.
Everything kind of connects. Eventually, if you do enough backtracking, you do see like, oh, this actor was in this film, and then they went on to work with Hitchcock, or then they went on to work with Kubrick, and then
right.
and so on and so forth. And you can kind of play that game, and you do make those connections. And when you find a filmmaker you like, you can explore their catalog, see what they've done. You might not necessarily like everything they've done, but if you allow yourself a little bit more curiosity and a little bit more flexibility, you can explore black and white films, foreign films, maybe even silent films,
right.
horror films if you're not a horror film fan, monster movies, cheesy B movies. It doesn't have to all be pretentious, you know, like
right.
Jean Delmont.
There are worlds upon worlds to explore.
Yeah.
So, well, Chris, thank you so much. I appreciate you being on, and thanks to our listeners.
Well, it was my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Library Beat from the Razorback Camper Sales Studio. Join us each Friday for a new topic.